door.
Welcome, everybody. I'm still over the back, but facing the other way. So we have some members that want to go around and introduce ourselves so you know who we are. And we know who we are. Take it away, Adam.
Adam Kravitz, community member.
Thomas Breitbach, chair.
Melanie Green, community member. I'm with Green Public Schools. My day job.
Hi, I'm Lori Lebowski. I'm with Vancouver City Council, and I represent District 1 on the CAB board.
I'm Michael Torres, Clark County Community Services staff.
Rebecca Rice, Clark County Community Services staff.
Janet with Clark County.
Hey. Doug Boff, council member of City of LaCenter, representing District 2.
And I'm Bridget McClain, and I'm chair of this group, although I have a hard time doing that. The next item of business is the approval of the April minutes, and everybody should have a copy of this. Mm-hmm. Are there any errors or omissions? So motion to adopt minutes would be in order.
Motion to adopt minutes as read.
I'll second.
Oh, one more. Hi. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Against? Abstentions?
I'll abstain.
Oh, that's new. Thank you. This is a pretty important meeting for our board because it's the time where we look at our funding and try to be fair about how we allocate it up. But I just want to take a second and say those applications were amazing. This work that's going on in the community is so impressive. Nobody has enough money to do all they would like to do, and we don't have enough money to give everybody what they want, but that doesn't reduce the impact that it makes with all your work and with how impressed we are with everything you do. So I just wanted to say that first because Rebecca's going to take it away with. Oh, it says me. Recommendation.
Because it's an action item, it goes to the chair to connect the action, but I'm
okay,
happy
Rebecca
to.
Rebecca will explain the action items that I will then bring before the group.
Good morning, everyone. So with the RFA process, we released it way back in October, if you guys can remember that long ago. And we've gone through a pretty extensive process and with the culmination of the advisory board in two different subcommittees scoring all of the applications or their specific subcommittee of applications. And then what we've done is taken those scores and found the average score for each application. And so that comes to this screen here that's just starting to come into focus. We had a discussion with our funding, with our finance people late last week to look and see, do we really have the dollars that we had anticipated having when we started the application, 7 months ago? And we were hoping that the new House Bill 1570 would show that we had more funds than we did at that time, that by rechecking 6 months later, we would see a difference. And unfortunately, even the conservative estimates that we were forecasting didn't come out to be.
And you mind if I interject here? So basically, when we say what is available for funding in the request for application, it's based on a projection of what we think will have come in over, averaged out over the next 3 years, because we do funding, you know, a certain amount for every single year. So we really have to project it out. And we were pretty aggressive with that projection, and we balance it out with our finance department. And we update, you know, once we're doing the funding decisions, you know, we sit down with finance and we see, okay, this is what our projection was 9 months ago. Where are we at right now? Does that still hold true? Do we need to make some adjustments? And we did have to make some adjustments, and some adjustments that reduced the total amount of funding available over the next 3 years. Sorry.
No worries. So we have it broken down by different housing type, and the anticipated amount for each of those is identified in the spreadsheet at the top line. So for Rapid Rehousing, Housing, we anticipated and we are maintaining the $400,000 that is available. With the ranking based on the CAB scores, the Impact Northwest Rapid Rehousing program came out on top at 78.2, and so they would receive full funding for their application, which is $179,100. The next application was SHARES Rapid Rehousing program at 76 points. They requested $300,000, however, we only have $220,900 remaining. Amy, are you able to proceed with that reduced funding?
Yes.
Okay. So that would give us the full funding, or what we would plan for to do for the Rapid Rehousing program. Are there any questions about the Rapid Rehousing piece or the process that led us to these scores?
Okay.
Fantastic. So let's look at permanent supportive housing. We anticipated $350,000 there, and we are maintaining that $350,000. The impact came out on top again at 81.3 points, so they would receive their full funding of $95,900, followed by Lifeline's permanent supportive housing for recovery at 80.3 points, and they requested $100,000. And then SHARES Permanent Supportive Housing Program came in at 61.3, and so we have remaining $154,100 for that project. Amy, would you be able to move forward with the reduced funding?
Yeah, and it's less than we have right now, so that's Permanent Supportive Housing Program, so it means that we'll be unpassing some people who are on that program.
Any questions about the Permanent Supportive Housing category? The next category is our targeted prevention category. We had two applications there. Janice Youth came in with 78.4 points and will be fully funded at $60,000. And then Accounts for the Homeless was at 75.4. And then they would receive $90,000. I have had previous conversations with Kate, and they can move forward with the limited or the reduced amount. Are there any questions about this category? Okay. Moving right along. The next category is our interim housing category. So you'll see Janice Youth receive the top mark at 79.4 points, so they would receive their full request of $60,000. Second Step came in second at 63.2 for $105,000. The Vancouver Affordable Housing Program for the new shelter. So since their presentation, there has been some things that have made this project not viable for the next at least couple of years. And so because of that, they're just not a feasible project yet.
What were the issues that came up?
In the proposal itself, projected timeline was March 2020, which, I believe is optimistic, given that there is not a location for the proposed shelter to do operations in, and the total amount of funding that is required for the shelter operations, the request doesn't cover it. The CDBG request to the county was also not funded, so the gap is actually greater. And the funding that we were hoping to have available in interim housing was reduced due to our updated projection. So we only have about $165,000. Available to per year to fund for interim housing right now. So if that were funded, besides the fact that we'd be funding it with money we don't really have,
right.
We would also be funding it at the expense of, we'd be setting aside dollars to be used at some indeterminate point in the future when, as you can see, there are plenty of other projects with immediate need that are also not being funded that could be, those dollars could be put to use right now. As Amy pointed out, like as an example, the permanent supportive housing proposal that is partially funded will probably result in people losing their housing unless we can find other funds, you know, unless we as a community can find other funds to do it. So really, it's hard to justify funding that.
Tough decisions, but thank you, Michael. Makes sense.
First, I want to apologize for the whatever is in this. I can't find it. Okay. You noticed I was looking. I can't find it. Get it out of there. So it's a little distracted. Are there any other questions about the interim housing category? The next category is outreach and engagement. We had $200,000 available. Janice used the perch, came in at 87 points, so they'll be funded at their $100,000 request. Community Services Northwest came in second at 79 points, and they will be partially funded for $100,000 of their $150,000. And I don't see any... Oh, yes. Okay, so they can move forward with the reduced funding then. Any questions about the outreach and engagement? And then our final category in the homeless crisis response system is our core system programs, where we knew we wanted to keep these in the community. We allocated $110,000 for those. Shared rent roll program came in top at 71.7 points. They requested $50,000, which we provide $60,000 to go to the SOAR program. SOARs did ask for a significant increase from what we've been traditionally funding them. We've been funding them at around the 60, 65,000 level, so this isn't much of a difference for them.
Correct.
Yes?
The minimum request was for 50,000, but we could do it with 40 if you want to fund more.
So we made a requirement of the $50,000 because of the amount of contracting and things like that. We could have that conversation about doing that and possibly going lower than $50,000 for the homeless crisis response system, but that would be a Michael decision.
Because typically we talk about over $40,000. That's why I'm...
For community action programs, yes. So that's kind of a conversation that we can definitely have. Are there any other questions about the core system programs? Okay. So we would need a motion to accept the applications as presented.
So would somebody like to make a motion that we accept the recommendations for funding for the 2019-20 to 2021 homeless crisis response system?
Move to approve. Make a motion to approve.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Against?
Rebecca, am I abstaining from this vote?
Yes.
Abstentions. So do we capture those votes on the audio for those who are listening? So there was one abstention.
All right.
Okay, moving right along.
So the community action programs, again, we also had these broken down. We originally had five different funding categories. We did not receive an application for education, for the education category this time around. We tried to have about $100,000 available in each of the categories. We had $390,000 total for all four categories, so we had to make a little bit of an adjustment. The employment category, we had four applications. PIT Partners and Careers came out with 86.2% of the score, and so they would be fully funded for their $100,000 request. Any questions about the employment category?
So we only have one program funded.
One program, yes.
Yeah.
Okay. The health and social behavioral health category, we had two different food programs come in. We originally had anticipated $100,000 in the funding for this category, and I'll explain why when we look down at the next category why. Share's hunger response came in with 76, score of 76, and their request was for $65,000, so they would be fully funded. Then that left $35,000 remaining in that category. When we looked at income and asset building, Clark College came in at a score of 86.7, and their request is for $90,000 out of $100,000. So to make the Clark County Food Bank a full program, and because we have food as a number one priority in our community needs assessment, we moved that $10,000 from the income and asset building up to the health and social behavioral health to fund the two food categories that would make the food bank a viable project. Are there any questions about the health and social behavioral health category?
I would argue, this isn't the time and place, so that this is a problem when we do these things at this stage, when we're making the awards, that the income and asset building program, we had four very good applications, both of the food ones, you know, it's a more flexible amount of money that they need to run those programs. And I would have rather seen us move some money down into the income and asset building so that at least we have two.
$35,000 is below the minimum contract that we would do. I guess it would be $45,000 if we move to $35,000 down. But when we look at the community needs assessment, which has guided our priority funding, food is number one, followed by housing, and then followed by employment services. So income and asset building is not high enough
to
justify moving
the money. But when you look at the food, food is certainly the priority need of people. On the other hand, there are more resources in the community to get food than there are these other things. So it's a bigger argument, and I understand what you're doing.
I understand what you're saying, though, Richard. It's a really valid point.
It is a valid point. Now, just remember that part of what we are monitored on, and you know, what the state looks for, is that we are making our funding decisions in consistent with what the community needs assessment found. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so for the next community needs assessment, we might well ask the question that food is a number one priority to find, but are you finding that food? Because there is certainly adequate food in the community if people know how to access it. And the way people donate for food is way different than they're going to donate to a program that provides, say, peer support and career counseling.
Sure.
So I'm not going to know how to go out and get that. But I sure am going to put out a bag for the postal workers this weekend.
Sure.
So that's my problem. So I'm not saying it wasn't number one need, because people do say that. But the question is whether you can meet your need easily or access it. We found that last time we did the needs assessment.
Mm-hmm.
And you will always find that. Always.
So maybe when we do the needs assessment next time, we need to drill down into, okay, but are you accessing any of the services that you might consider needs? So maybe we need to look at other questions that can help us drill down to that a little bit more.
When is the next time you do the needs assessment?
Next year.
Next year, okay.
Yeah. And, you know,
conversation.
Oh, it's absolutely a good conversation. So I don't want to shut it down. You know, I do bear in mind. So yes to what you're saying, and we did have service providers make a proposal based on what their perceived need in the community was, and it wasn't fully funded. You know, so yes, and you know, we do have, with what we have in front of us right now, there is a need for funding articulated, and you know, like we're not making, and just to be clear, we're not really exercising a lot of at the staff level of discretion. We're following, you know, both the the ranking and scoring that you as a CAP have done, and
sure.
the community needs
sure.
assessment, you know, like, you know, straight in the order. So we're just kind of like, that's, you know, that's the way it falls out. So,
yeah.
Totally.
Sure. Any other questions about health and social behavioral health or the income and asset building? Okay. The final category we have was under support services, and we had one application for the volunteer lawyers access to justice, so they would be fully funded. That one was the easy one.
I'd just also like to add, too, to really reflect on what Bridget said at the beginning, that these were very difficult decisions, at least I can only speak for me personally, and they were all the applications that I reviewed were amazing. And it was really difficult to make some of these decisions, and so I just want all of you to know that we put time and effort and love and energy into making those decisions. It's not something that we took lightly. Just really hard to make these decisions.
Yes, we have very scarce resources, and well, it's just my personal. So, a motion to accept the 2019 to 2021 community action programs, list of funded service providers would be in order.
So move.
Second.
Okay.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Abstain.
Just to follow up your comments, Michael, you said we received less than...
No, so, well, less than we projected.
Okay.
So when we do an RFA, you know, it's a 3-year period that we're trying to fund. So we're projecting how much revenue is going to be collected so that we can fund, how much will we have per year, you know, to fund over the next 3 years. And when we did the RFA, House Bill 1570, which increased the revenue for document reporting fees that just passed, which it has increased revenue, that's good, but we also did not have any or much data to go by in terms of how much it was increasing revenue by. So we were pretty aggressive. Well, we had lots of discussions with finance in terms of, on the program side, pushing to be aggressive, on the finance side, trying to be conservative. But we only had about 6 months of data at that point to project 36 months, you know. And we had about $135,000, $165,000 less, it looks like, per year than what we, actually a little more than that, but we're, you know, than what we were hoping to have. So it's not that, oh, we, you know, the revenue has dropped. You know, that's not it. It's we projected
more
than what it looks like we're collecting so far.
So the budget that has just passed, or the funding sources, are from 2020 to 2022.
You're talking about the county budget?
State.
Yes. But that's not...
Biennial budget.
Yeah. So that's not generally... That affects our funding in what we might get in terms of consolidated homelessness grant dollars. It really is not going to touch other things. And we don't know how much we're getting in consolidated homelessness grant dollars yet either.
I just... Because this is a, you know, future funding streams that are uncertain, I would like to suggest that if we get, or projections coming higher, or if we get different funding sources, or if the state ends up, I'd like to suggest that
we not just add to existing, these existing just passed contracts, that we review the applications that we had this time with a view to funding more agencies?
So the first step going to fill in those unfunded, or underfunded, the ones that didn't, that got partial funding. So we would start there to fully fund them. That would be the first step, depending on what funding comes in, which I apologize,
it's like SHARE and community services.
Well, any of the programs.
It could be any of them.
Yeah, all the programs. So, yes, so any of the programs that you've already scored and ranked and chosen for funding but are only partially funded from what their original request, as if more revenue comes in, we would increase those contracts to what that originally requested amount was.
I would like to have a discussion before that's done, just so that we make sure that, you know, 3 years is a long time period. Mm-hmm. Who knows what innovations or ideas or new programs would come up. So we will have signed a contract at the lower amount. So there is no technical obligation to supplement to the full level. So I think a discussion on whether that's appropriate.
So
would be good.
So yes, we can have discussions. Just remember, none of us have just the discretion.
No.
You know, like, so we have to follow procurement rules and contracting rules for public funds, which would mean, you know, RFAs. I mean, the reason I'm saying that is that discussion is not like, you know, what would be a good thing to fund, what is out in the community, let's do that. You know, we have constraints in how we do it.
The other thing.
So, question. Mm-hmm. So, when you talk about unfunded, is that all of the applications or the ones where it was the top two, for example?
The ones that were not fully funded, that received.
That received some.
Okay.
Yes.
Correct.
So okay. When we're talking about that additional funding, if we're able to get some, what I'm thinking through is, let's pick on Amy for a second with SHARE, because she has a partially funded program. And bottom line is, people's lives are in the balance with some of these funding decisions. This is the bottom line of it. Not only the people that we're serving, but also I assume that you might have to lay off staff because of not having enough funding to be able to pay them. So if we, what's the time frame as far as any additional funding that we could bring in so that we could fully fund SHARE, as an example, so that Amy would know that she doesn't have to lay off that staff person? Is there any... Anybody following me?
Yeah, no, I think I'm following you, but so like we're talking hypotheticals, and remember we're the dollars we're talking are projections.
Yeah, okay.
You know, so I'm not expecting that we're gonna have, I mean, let's be really, really clear. You know, it's happy thoughts to be like, oh, there's gonna be more money that comes in that we were not expecting, and what do we do with that? That's a really, really nice problem to have. We're projecting out what we think is going to happen already. Mm-hmm. So, you know, realistically, you know, fluctuations that would increase are probably not going to be a lot to start whole new programs and you know,
sure.
You know, so, you know, let's just be realistic of what we're talking about. And, you know, the other thing that sometimes happens, not necessarily through the county, even in the community, is Commerce will have a set of funds available, but it will be very specific to an activity, a target population, and stuff like that. And you know, it may even be through, you know, something that we don't necessarily fund. So when you have like enough money comes in to start a whole new program, it might be through a COC. You know, and it might be very, very, very targeted to what those funds are for.
Are there any additional funding streams through Commerce or anybody else that we as a county would be able to go after that we don't know about yet?
Well, if I don't know about
we
are applying and receiving everything that we're eligible for, to my knowledge.
Okay.
So
we'll leave cash on the table.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We appreciate your work in the community and appreciate your time.
When I drafted the calendar, I figured there would be more to have conversations because there would be different types of money that were available depending on how things kind of work their way out. So,
for next time, I would really like to review it and discuss the sort of questions I asked, not necessarily in front of them. It would have been good to review the allocations and have the debate about where things are before we actually announce the award.
Well, it's an open public meeting.
Yeah, any time, but we've got a specific group waiting for, that's what they're waiting for us to hear. So to have a debate about the hunger, for instance, after we've made the award, seems kind of
awesome.
I agree. Yeah, it seemed like I was being really inappropriate discussing it, and yet, because we'd already got a motion. I mean, so nothing is going to change, and who knows whether it's possible to change, but at least it seems like it should come to the board before.
Maybe a workshop, like workshopping at first?
Yeah,
I think something.
I think in terms of the number of applications, I know at the city, when people rank applications, maybe each group gets 7 at the most. If there was a way to divide them up.
It was our decision.
That's
okay. Right. We were gluttons for punishment, and we decided. Rebecca recommended that we each do fewer, and some of us wanted to do more.
Okay.
So it's probably my fault.
Well, let's not go with fault and stuff like that. Everyone here is doing their best.
Yeah.
You know, I will just put on the table. You know, I hear you. I don't disagree what you're saying about it'd be nice to workshop stuff like that. Just remember, and I can vouch for the work staff is trying to do, getting this group together. Is really, 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 really hard.
Yeah.
It's incredibly hard, to schedule. Every time we get together, it is also, a public meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to follow the public meeting laws.
Mm-hmm.
And it would always be nice. I'm not saying it can't be done. I'm not saying it won't be done. You know, it would always be nice to meet more. We're doing our best to kind of follow your intent and your directions and be in compliance with the program guidelines and law. So yes, let's look for ways to improve and do more future. If we have those more meetings, more meetings to do these things, we're going to have to figure out how to get together and do it.
Oh, well, maybe it's not even more meetings. It's building that into our schedule of existing meetings. Like, I really like Kate's presentation last time. That was really useful information, so I don't want anybody to think I'm criticizing that. But that was a meeting where most people had read applications. And we could have had a discussion about, how's this all working and all, what are our priorities? And this is the way we're funding, so it's not a surprise when we sit and think.
The thing, though, I'm just thinking logistically, if we had a meeting like that where we were discussing the awards before they happened, because it's a public meeting, all of those folks could very easily listen to it before we have a discussion.
The other thing, just to caution us, and we do it too, like whenever I have to do different scoring and stuff like that, you don't want to, and I'm not telling you stuff you don't know, so please don't be offended by it. Not trying to be condescending, but you want to do scoring and ranking and see where it falls out. And that's where it falls out. You don't want to do this going rank and see where it falls out, and like, oh, wait a minute, I think I want it. That didn't really work out the way I wanted it to work out, so let's move what we already scored and ranked to fit what our personal preferences and biases, because I can tell you right now, what was funded was not necessarily, like, as an individual that I would necessarily rank and score and choose. And it's okay. You know, I mean, that's the way you ranked and scored it, and with integrity, you know.
That's
so
democracy.
Well, and it's the integrity of a process. So, you know, you want to follow that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, sorry.
I think maybe the bigger discussion, if I keep going back to it, is the community needs assessment. So what I wasn't aware of is even though those things were scored and they're scored what I felt appropriately based on the process and the fidelity of that process, when we had extra money left over for a certain category to transfer it over into a category that the needs assessment said was more important, I guess that's where I keep coming back to. Maybe that needs to be looked at a little bit deeper next time, because I'm curious to know. I mean, I think the fidelity of the needs assessment is spot on, but I'm wondering if we're taking a snapshot of the demographic of Clark County, I imagine, or maybe the city of Vancouver, and what they see the needs are, who are the people that are seeing those? Are they the actual users of those? Are they just the
It's 90-something% of the people that responded to the survey were under 200% of the poverty. 76% of those were under 125% of the poverty level for their household, and we had 1,100 responses for households that responded to that.
The other part that plays in, and this was part of the discussion when we were discussing the needs assessment when it went out, is how were those needs assessments completed?
Mm-hmm.
And so if a lot of them were distributed at food banks, for instance,
and we looked into that too. Remember?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
remember the time before we had a lot of dental because they were really good at getting this in.
Exactly.
So dental came out as the number one priority.
So, but remember, you know, again, and yes, and we improve and we get better. And then the last needs assessment, you know, we actually checked for bias and factored that in to the community, you know, priorities. So, yes, I guess. What I'm trying to do here, like in this discussion, is not counter what you're saying, is fill in the, you know, put your discussion in the context of the things we have been doing and have done. You know, this.
And my comments are not a criticism of the work that's been done. It's looking at how we can make it better.
Absolutely.
In the future.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the needs assessment was way better than it's been before, and it was packed with useful information.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting when you take it and the Council for Homeless Action Plan, put them together, you've really got a comprehensive picture. Only we don't put them, they're different time frames, so we don't have the advantage of putting them together before this RFA process so much.
We
pushed the timeline for starting this RFA to
get
the homeless action plan done, so we weren't working with the old homeless action plan.
Yeah.
But anyway, we're just looking at.
We're always we are always looking to improve the processes. One question I have is, you know, we wanted to make sure because we knew you were scoring so many applications, you know, we wanted to make sure you had it. As much time as possible to get to review all of those applications and then get in and score them in the system. So I didn't even get scoring finished with the scoring until Friday. And so I was on Friday
that's a reality.
We want to make sure that you guys have as much time to get in there and review and score. So because we let you know it's going to take a while to score all of those or to review those applications.
The only other thing I have to add before we totally leave the discussion about the needs assessment, because that played so much into this, is this last time I really pushed for that getting out through the family resource centers in schools, because I think that would be a way to just get out there. It wasn't able to happen.
It did for some.
It did.
Yes.
But anyway. next time around, I think we need to make that like a serious priority.
We already started looking at the timeline.
Yes.
So we're starting earlier so that we can relist
right.
them during the school year. So that yes, that
yeah.
was one of those
because
things. That, and Melanie was part of it, and she had seen the surveys and her.
During the summer was not the best.
The first month of the school year was
yeah.
was difficult, yes.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
we didn't look at that.
Yeah.
I would just comment, and you know what I'm going to say, is Zoom grants was not easy for me to use, and it could be me, but I'm just terrible with.
I'm right there with you.
Yeah, that was a lot of my time, was just trying to get into Zoom grants, and I got together with Bridget, and
it wasn't fun, but I don't
printed out all the applications
yeah.
and
so
read through them that way, and then went back
yeah.
to
the board. That's so bad reading them. It was when you came to score, and the checkboxes at the side, the numbers on those didn't
yeah.
correspond to the question numbers. Because there were a whole
because
bunch of questions we didn't get to rank, which
we
yeah.
are actually
I can't figure out why
switching
some of those.
To a new system. We
oh.
just contracted with a Neighborly software, so we are switching over the next several months. So the next time we do this RFA, and they've assured us that the scoring component is like right at the question, not in a separate screen. So it's like you read the question and you can enter the score, which makes a lot of sense to us. So Zoom grants was a huge improvement over doing the hard copy processes that we used to do, but it
yeah.
has its challenges. And this new software actually is going to help us with all of our loan management for our other funding too. So it'll be a great improvement, but it'll be a learning process for
seriously,
us.
Seriously, you guys, the binder what used to be this thick. It
yeah,
was all patient.
That's what
it
I
sucked.
Yeah, but I could get to it.
So,
no, I just maybe build in time for, I don't know, that could be me. It's just learning how to use, to get in. I have a hard enough time logging into all kinds of things anymore. So, I don't know, just building in time
yeah,
for people like myself.
Maybe we did
that.
I did the January
meeting.
Yeah,
did
a little
yeah.
bit of training, but I mean, and especially with this newer one. You know, I'll make sure that I try to get more step-by-step instructions out for you guys.
And you did a lot of work. I mean, you had that PowerPoint. I appreciate you meeting with me. And Bridget, you met with me.
Comment I'd like to make. It was, since I'm the new kid on the block, this was all new to me. And I did not have the pleasure of having the big binder from But I heard about that from a couple of people. And yeah, I had a problem logging on with Zoom grants, but I have to say that their customer support was excellent. I shot them a note within 2 minutes. I had a response from them, and so they got me up. They got me up and running. The guide that you put together, Rebecca, was phenomenal. I had that in front of me. I went
oh,
through pictures.
Oh,
Michael, okay. Well, I'm giving you credit for that. Okay. That was really, really helpful. And then your suggestion about opening up the questionnaire in PDF format, so having it where I could read the whole screen,
mm-hmm.
it went well. It was a little frustrating for me since it was new, but as I got more and more into it, then it started really making sense. I actually went back on that on some of the first ones and actually made some changes as I could see what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
I was also amazed at the wide variety of answers and the quality of the answers. I mean, some were just phenomenal. They were
yes.
right on target. Others, it was almost they didn't even understand. I mean, that was,
exactly.
I said, and I started wondering, is this because I'm new and I'm not reading it right? But
no.
I could see it as we got into it. And then the one item that really stood out that surprised me was outcomes.
Oh.
Some were just terrific in all the outcomes that they had detailed. And others barely even scratched the surface when it came to outcomes.
Yeah.
So I have to admit, that really played a large role in my scoring on those applications.
So, you know, in our vast numbers of notes of things that we want to do for next time,
yeah.
not just with the CAP, but like with the service providers, like I want to actually have some workshops
mm-hmm.
with the service providers during the next 3 years,
yeah.
not even specific to this RFA, but these are the kinds of things you need to do around program design.
Yeah.
You know, this is what you need to factor in terms of funding. You know, this is what your match. You know, this is what match and allowable, you know, indirect costs and stuff are. This is how you calculate outcomes. Because I think it's very uneven in our community, and I hope that the quality of not only what's being proposed to you know, to us for funding, but to HUD. To the state, you know, by these different service providers, the quality improves.
The other thing, though, since we're talking about the applications, some of them that were from the same parent organization were literally copy and pasted. Yeah. I mean, that was like,
hey,
come on, you guys.
If you saw my notes, my hard copy was, I wrote same. Because then I didn't have to waste my time reading that question.
Yeah, like, okay, it's been
that nice.
Yeah.
So what I found myself...
My hours over Christmas break. But no, I agree. I 100% agree.
I found I had to be careful to be consistent then, because I got the same answers, and I'd go back and say, how did I score that one? And then I figured I'd better be consistent on those kinds of things.
I have a question. Do grantees ever come back to you and say, why did we score so low?
Yes.
What could we have done to improve?
Yes, and honestly, we have to. When that happens, we can give them the aggregates and the averages. We don't get into, hey, on your question 8, you scored, Bridget scored, 6.5, and if she had scored higher in this area, you would have made it. We don't.
Your personal scoring does not go anywhere.
Yeah. In fact, that's one reason, like the slides that you saw. Yeah, we keep, and we have to keep for public records, everyone's scoring and stuff like that, and just. We can show the integrity of the process, every step of the way. But we don't share it, because we don't want to open that kind of liability.
Yeah.
But we're happy to sit down with any organization and be like, look, in your proposal, your program design, you need to make your program design more solid, your outcomes. This is what was asked. This is what you said.
Does it seem to line up pretty accurately with how we scored and your ability to answer that question? Like, if we
haven't had a chance to really sit down and look at what your scores were.
Yeah, I don't know.
We just looked at the overall.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, if the overall score for one was a 3, and you and they're asking, how could I have answered the outcome question better? And does it seem to line up with your interpretation of, that was a pretty bad answer?
We haven't even had that.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, we've only had time to put together.
On Friday, it was, Lydia, overall 36 for this one, 56 for that one. And then putting them all in this spreadsheet to give me that average, that's as far as.
I'm just curious to ask when you said, Michael, that you, the things that you personally would have scored were a little bit different than what you saw happen. I'm just wondering how. Were we off?
No. Absolutely, no. I'm not saying you're off. Like your ranking and your scoring is what it is, we gave you, kind of like an outline of these are the things to look for, and so I'm absolutely fine. Your ranking and scoring is fine. I would say I'd be surprised. If I were, any one of us would probably have slight differences in what the aggregate scores were, so please, I'm not at all saying that what you guys scored is off or anything like that.
Okay.
There were a couple of things that you guys scored and we didn't get scored. Mm-hmm.
The objective scores.
Some of them, though, weren't so objective. There was one around, maybe it was there was one early on that I thought, that's a really subjective thing. Mm. And the other thing was by not commenting on the budget. To me, the budget is such a reflection of output and program design, but we didn't get to rank that at all. And objectively, you need to rank the budget, but it does say whether their program design is any good, right, or not any good. That's the wrong way, but... You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know how to resolve that because clearly
we've debated in multiple RFAs across lots of funding sources. Do we put points to the budget? Do we? And we used to, then we took them away. And trying to find what that right balance is, and trying to put those objective score points to something that we feel is really impactful on that program.
And I can't remember the question that I thought has been one of our key concerns, and we're not ranking it. But it was something around either equity or the. Respect
the best practices section. Was that maybe
it? No, because I think best practices are pretty objective. I mean, they're ranked as best practice. so evidence-based practice. And sometimes I notice in these applications, they call them best practice, but it's not a data-driven.
The other kind of maybe overlooked question, I don't know if other people thought this too, but the question around data and what they're doing to collect data,
mm-hmm.
you guys have heard me say it for years now, that the technology and the data collection part of it has such a big bearing on the front-end staff and what they're literally able to do, that I paid very close attention to that question. Did anybody else find anything interesting? I mean, some of them literally were like one sentence long, and I'm like, really? Come on, people.
Yeah.
Well, the question sort of implied really a connection to HMIS data,
mm-hmm.
which is very clear. I mean, that's what it requires. They have to do it.
Sure.
But that's a whole different question from your sort of.
So this is a great conversation, and we'll take all this, and we, you know, next time we will definitely look at improvements, but we are now way behind schedule.
Yeah.
I have a quick question.
Yeah.
Could one of the nonprofits do a PDR and get our individual scores?
A public disclosure FOIA request?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good question. Probably.
I bet they could.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we would respond, we're not hiding.
Yeah.
Would we be notified if that were to happen?
I think usually with public disclosure requests, there's usually some consultation with the agency's attorney, and then the conversation around, is the request in line with the good use for public, since that's the nature behind it, is the public disclosure is intended to be good. So there's more conversations that happen.
But I mean, we follow the law. We don't not disclose, So
I don't think it matters. But I'm just wondering if that's the case. Typically, with public disclosure requests, they have to ask a specific question and and very. They have to put bookends on their request.
Yes.
So just curious. That's
So when we get that, we do send it through our prosecuting attorney, and do guidelines. We will always respond. I feel very, very, very comfortable that, we have the paper trail that respects the integrity of the process, so.
I would just want to know about it if somebody said, hey, I want to know what Lydia said about my program. I would want to know about it.
Sure.
So moving right along. I mean, it's hard to know where in the process we have these discussions, because they're really important, and they help shape things that we need to teach. So it's almost like we never know quite. The satisfaction survey report, that was a separate item on here. Would this come out of something? I mean, we just get this occasionally.
So once a year. We take a look at the, so in our year-end narrative, we ask all of the programs to talk to us and provide us an overview of what findings they're getting in their, when they're doing their satisfaction survey.
Good. So we require in our contracts that satisfaction feedback be collected throughout the whole service delivery, and then we collect the summaries of them.
So this is based on what we were able to get out of there. The hard part is sometimes the agencies give us the data in different types of formats. And so what we are presenting here is what the response to the overall satisfaction of the program is. So this, what I'm looking for is the number of people in the program, the number of people who completed a satisfaction survey, the number of people who have identified that they were satisfied or higher with the program, and the number that were either neutral or had a negative to satisfaction with the program to get this information. So not all of the programs, and I didn't start this report early enough to go back and get some clarification, so I apologize for that. So this is based on not all of the programs, but a lot of the programs. We had 8 agencies that I was able to get that very specific information so that we could have that for the report with 19 programs and over 1,400 responses throughout the programs in the community.
There were a total of those ones that we collected, a total of 5,198 households that were served, which includes individual households, so programs that only serve an individual, not the entire household. And then with those responses, we had 737 responses that were from four of our self-sufficiency programs, our community action programs, and 694 responses that were from five of our homeless crisis response systems. You'll notice that four and five makes nine because one of our programs does both housing and one self-sufficiency, so they're counted in both of those. With those 1,431 responses, 97% of them indicated that they were satisfied or strongly satisfied, very satisfied, strongly satisfied. They had a few different types of wording choices. And 3% that had either a neutral or a negative, not satisfied program response. Some of the things that we saw in the responses, we asked them to send us comments that are in the survey. So they copy and paste them and send them to us. And so when we were looking through those responses, some of the things that we were listening or noticing across multiple responses was that they participants generally reported that they got the services that they were looking for in that program, and that those services were meeting the needs that they had. They had generally felt a feeling of being welcomed and listened to by their case manager in their programs. They felt reported being safe within that program, to be honest and open to the case manager about the barriers that they had, and frequently expressed gratitude towards staff and the volunteers in those programs. Where we saw a couple of growth areas, we had a couple of people express need for more service availability. If you'll, in the sample comments down below, those would be things like one person said, we need to provide more outreach. So it's not necessarily that we need more resources to get into the programs, it's maybe more additional services within there. Another person had responded that they had a limited amount of time to get things done and wanted more time to do. So those are the things that went into that growth area. The other growth area was a need for, the need for more time within the program to be successful, sorry. And then there's just a sample of comments. There's some very nice comments, and there's some that need improvement for those programs. One of the changes that we'll be doing with the new contracts is we will be putting in, instead of collecting this information once a year, we'll start doing it in the quarterly reports. So we'll have more data, and it'll be very specific so that they give me exactly the information I'm looking for, the number of people, the number of responses to the survey at that time, the number of positives, the number of negatives, so that I'll be able to provide to you from every program, not just.
So will it then be detailed by program? I mean, this is, I realize you produce this to meet a requirement, but this really doesn't tell us anything about individual programs or generally reported. I mean, there are no numbers in here. This is so. Once it's done quarterly by program, would we get actual data?
I'm not quite sure yet because I haven't even thought about the quarterly reports yet.
Yeah.
And what is coming after that?
Even if
a lot of steps
annual,
I
mean, this is of all the funding streams that we saw today. So. I don't want to say it means nothing, but it really doesn't have any actual data in here. I mean, I'm on a roll today. I should check.
Well, from all of the programs, from 19 of the programs that are funded, to have a 97% response or satisfaction response rate does mean something. That means generally in most of our programs, people are feeling satisfied with the services that they're being received.
So I think this is I think it's a good thing to do. I'm glad that you're going to be doing it quarterly. My only question is how much more staff time is that going to take away from, because every time we're collecting data, yes, I love the data. We need the data. But we're taking more time away from that staff person to be able to serve the human being. So where's that balance?
What about semi-annual?
Well, so
do you see what I'm saying?
Yes, and like everyone everyone beware of what you ask for.
Right.
You know, because if if we give you by program, you're gonna have 19 different programs. You're gonna or whatever it is. You're gonna have multiple pages to sort through, and you've been asking loud and clear, Lydia. You have been asking loud and clear for the past 3 years that you want more customer satisfaction data.
I get it.
And that you want us to verify that you're collecting customer satisfaction data. So when we start collecting it more, being like, wait.
Exactly. That's
what
I'm
saying. Are we asking for too much?
That's what I'm saying.
Bridget, as we design, we can make some changes and try to give you some more granularity. Just be aware that you'll be getting more information if we do that. And, we overload you with information a lot as it is.
The other thing to keep in mind is we're trying to really look at system level. What we can do is break it down by program types, or we can look at those different options.
Yeah.
Maybe not by actual program, because then we're getting into a lot of that time that, capacity issues.
I just think that there's got to be a balance.
Yeah.
And honestly, I think that technology is a huge part to play. If we put it in Google Forms, make it super easy. You know, as an example, I think that that's something that we could look at the next time we go.
Well, and we leave it to the agencies on how the best way for them to conduct their surveys. Is it a paper form because that's what the youth are actually going to fill out? Or is it SurveyMonkey or Google Forms?
But as we've seen happen before with agencies, are doing what they think that our requirements are, not necessarily what's going to be the best situation for them. So I guess the instruction needs to be from you guys. Hey guys, think outside the box. Is there a faster, better way, cheaper way that you can do this?
Well, and I do have those conversations in my monitoring, saying, is this the best way? Only doing it at service exit is not most, maybe doing it annually or regularly. Janice says there's a more informal way. So we do have conversations with the agencies to do what is best for that program.
Right.
So
as long as they know about options that are out there.
So just for my own head, the aid agencies, does that include, just as an example, Cobb County Food Bank?
We're not funding them right now, so no. What I can tell you what's in there.
So these sort of parallel are more intensive sort of programs?
This would be what we're funding.
Anything we're funding.
It's a requirement for all of our contracted programs.
I mean, that's where we have a problem doing satisfaction for somebody who's been the Clark County Volunteer Lawyers Program and got help with filing
their illness report.
Yeah, is quite different from somebody who's, got an opioid addiction problem, has helped find whatever. And so overall, I can see why summarizing you lose some of the detail. And this is a great report for showing we're doing something. I think my concern is getting an idea of meeting the need and how people are satisfied with it.
I want to piggyback off this and this because usually I'm pretty quiet because I'm still learning, but this leaves me with a feeling that I need to speak on. And what I'm seeing and what I'm hearing is that, if I put myself in that position down there at receiving from any of these programs, I am going to be highly satisfied because I'm receiving something for the first time ever. I'm one of the 10%.
Right.
So I'm getting something. So of course this looks this good. We're not capturing is all these conversations I'm having with people who have been through a program, didn't get help by a program, got entered into a program, but then timed out. And so those are the people that we're not capturing. And those are the people that we need to find out where the gaps are. This is not giving us any information to work with.
So where you're going with that, which we also try to capture,
okay,
is going to be so we're talking two different things here. One is customer feedback.
Mm.
Customer feedback is going to be a participant in a program. Okay? There is, as there should be, this is not like, hey, everything in the community is rosy. This is the people who are enrolled and receiving services in the program, how they're doing. And just so, and this is not, by the way, like, this is just like the tip of the iceberg of customer feedback processes across the program. This is like an aggregate of all data, as Bridget mentioned, you know, where you look at what is community capacity and who's not being served, and are you capturing that data? We're not going to get that from the customer satisfaction reports. You're going to get that from, you know, the Council for Homeless HMIS data stuff. That
yeah, I had a bunch
about.
Of questions.
You know, so the reason I'm saying that is you are correct that this does not reflect what is the level of satisfaction in the community, is the need in the community being met, you know?
Well, it's not about the need. It's about the people that are slipping through the program.
Absolutely.
And that's where, you know, it's not, I know we're not meeting the need, and I know the numbers are greater than we can serve, but there's the gaps in the programs where people fall through, and their satisfaction with how the program, that's the unwritten stuff that no one gets told about, except we all know about it when we're working boots on the ground. And so it's that, like, dichotomy of, like, you know, yeah, we look good, but you know,
but we don't. I
don't.
Mean, so, and not disagreeing with you. What I'm saying is, we also do capture that, and that is when, and as a community, we need to get more sophisticated about this in general. But that is where the HMIS, the outcome data of what are your successful exits to permanent housing, what are your returns to homelessness, that's why it's so important to capture those numbers and understand it and you know, in our outcomes, because that's going to show you what is slipping through the cracks in terms of, I'm in a program, I did not have a successful exit, or I had a successful exit, but I fell back into homelessness, and you know, like, or I was in this program and this was my length of time in that program, or the length of time that I was homeless. So you're right, you know, and we have a lot of growth to do in this community of how we're collecting that data, and even more importantly, how we're using that data. But we are collecting it, you know, and a lot, we need to do a lot better, you know, don't get me wrong. So, yeah. I just, the only reason I'm saying that is I don't want you guys to walk away from this thing that doesn't exist. You know,
The thing is, all the data's there. It's how we spend time analyzing and putting it out or using it to change the system.
Correct.
We have
correct.
To move on, people, so I won't talk about this.
So then we have our semi-annual reports on the how the funds are being spent. So this one's going to be a little bit different than the last one, only in the fact that because we switch over our financial systems to Workday, we do not have access to the reports like we used to have in FMS. And so this goes through the end of 2018. Normally, we would usually try to get through March data. This only goes through the end of December 2018 because that's when we still had everything in FMS and we have the numbers available for you. So when you're looking at the percentage spent out, you should be looking for majority of the programs to be around 66%. Mm-hmm. You know, if they're down at 60, if they're a little bit higher, it's you know, but that should be the general look at of where they should be. There's a couple of highlighted ones. The diversion program with Council for the Homeless has spent it a little higher. They spend out a little faster than they were anticipating at first, then they slowed it down. And then they will spend out before the end of the contract year. The emergency funds for dislocated families, which is also under Council for the Homeless, that again is the one that's only used when a household is being evicted because of code enforcement issues. And so we have not had any requests for funds to use those funds. It's not uncommon to not receive any requests for that one. The perch is down around 49%, and their Ascend Motel Voucher Program. Winter usually is a little bit after the first of the year, and that's what Janice saves their Ascend Motel Vouchers for when it's really cold to house their youth. So you won't see it here. They are on track to spend out. And then the perch, I'm not exactly sure why they're lagging a little bit behind, but that's for their day center, and they have always spent out their contract, so I'm not concerned at this point for that. If you look on the back, expenses for permanent supportive housing program, which is also highlighted, is completely spent out. That contract ended in March, or I mean in April, at the end of April 2018. That's why it's at 100%. And you'll also see some of Cher's programs that are ESG are spent out at 100%, and that is because Commerce switched out what funds we were getting, ESG to CHG. So hopefully you'll remember that we had the conversation a while ago about this. So same amount of funds, just a different funding source, to remove all of the ESG requirements, which are heavy requirements. We had to cancel those contracts, stop them where they were at, and do brand new contracts.
Same programs, same funding level.
That's why the next three after that are down kind of low on their spending. It's because it's just a different amount and a smaller contract, period, for them to spend it out. They also are on track to spend out those funds.
So are you talking like the Women's Emergency Shelter? Is that one of the ones you're...
Yeah, so it would be starting with the Emergency Shelter ESG Match, mm-hmm. which is their, what, fourth one down, the Women's Shelter, and the Day Center. So you'll see those duplicated with mm-hmm. a different contract number the next three rows.
Okay.
Or like two rows.
Got it.
But it was ESG requires a one-year match. It requires, for shelter, it has additional requirements for shelter operations, and we didn't want to maintain those if we didn't have those requirements.
It looks nice.
So then the second one, the smaller one, is the same concept except where it's just focused on the CHG and also EFG because we did have EFG funds.
So question, what piece of paper do we get that shows the numbers that go along with these totals? When's that?
That's the quarterly outcomes
quarterly?
Report.
Okay.
And that'll be at the next meeting.
Okay. I like having them both. At the same time, I can get a clue. Do we need a discussion?
I'm sorry, what?
Does anybody want to say anything?
I just have a really, really good, dumb question. But when and how do they bill for these? Is it after?
Yeah, it's cost reimbursement.
Okay.
Yes, on a monthly basis. So cost reimbursement means they accrue the cost and then they bill us. So when they are sending in their invoices by the 20th of May, it's for all their April services.
Okay, moving right along then, if there are no further questions. Rebecca, what? Oh,
Bridget, you're next.
Oh, dear. I suggest we defer this discussion because we have a guest here and we can catch up and I won't have to do it unless you have anything you want to add, people. Beth, are you? It's been great. Beth's been coming.
The last thing I remember,
doing a lot of work.
We did, you guys had a conversation about the C-Tran line, but I don't know how that went.
Cameron was going to handle.
They submitted an alternative route that they're still looking
but
for public comment on.
It was good because somebody raised the issue of the C-Tran route and it seemed highly appropriate for the advocacy committee to make a comment, and Cameron was the one that brought it to our attention and we got approval to do that, but then I sent it back to her and I actually missed a couple of meetings. So
Karen,
Karen. I always get her name on.
She's doing a training up at Elane today with the funding discussions that they've been having that need to come in. So she's doing some sort of
work stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she did let me know she wouldn't be able to make it.
Yeah. No, and it's not. And I was, Curtis was a little busy, but I didn't hear whether she followed up. But that is a good thing to note for everybody with when those community issues come up that impact low income people in our community or the homeless or whatever, we do have a voice to participate.
As C-Tran said, we receive more comments than we ever had.
Yeah, I was going to say, the actions led through the Healthy Living Collaborative, my organization, a number of other organizations, we put that out really hard and fast. And so they received over 200 comments. And yes, so this is the first time I've ever seen a concession from C-Tran. So it was kind of nice. The alternative is... okay, you know, a lot of people are still like, it's not, but I think, you know, 8 routes Monday through Friday is more than we would have got if we didn't advocate, so.
The city council, you know,
Okay, that's good to know. We weren't sure how many organizational comments happened, but we were rather happy with the compromise.
Yeah. And they listened.
For C-Trans, it was nice. They, yeah, it was nice to see the compromise.
Good points.
Very true.
Good on everybody.
So if those issues do come up, I think it's great if you let the advocacy committee know. I also went to the Interfaith coffee, and I'd never been to that before. And that was really impressive, the turnout. And Kate did a great speech there on, and Amy around share services. It is very impressive that that many people turn out to just talk about community issues. And it's another forum that we need to listen to so that we sort of build that into things.
Staff tries to go to those. There's actually two faith-based coffees.
East
there's
and
Vancouver
west.
And then Evergreen. And Melanie actually puts together the Evergreen one, so we're great to have her. And we never did an official meeting, and I'm sorry, Dale, we take 60 more seconds. So we are really close to having a full board, and it's super exciting, but Melanie is one of our newest members since our last meeting. She will be official May 21st at the county council meeting, but she's already got her appointment letter signed and turned in, and all that's ready to go. So she is our newest board member. She is with the Evergreen Family Community Resource Center, and is will be a great resource, and the Evergreen faith-based coffee, so she's going to be a fantastic resource for the board. We're excited to have her. And then we have two elected officials that will hopefully be on by the next board meeting. Alicia Topper, our county treasurer, and Amy, and I don't know how to say her last names, Bogé, from the town of Yakult.
Wow.
SF. So they are paperwork is in process, so we're super excited, and then we will be an officially full board of 12 members, and I don't know that we're going to fit all around the table anymore. Alright, so thank you, I apologize. But the faith-based coffees are really great. Anne McInerney Ogle and Temple Lentz was at the Evergreen one last month that both Beth and I were able to attend. I couldn't make it, I wanted to go to that one, but I was in Spokane for the WASCAP.
I thought you were there.
Never mind, I was there.
Well, thank you, Rebecca, for putting in all the time to make this.